Good evening. Actually, good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I always say good evening, but with the time change, seems like good afternoon might be more appropriate.
Oh, that's true. Of course, it depends on where you are, right? People on the East Coast, it's definitely good evening.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So we'll give a little variety.
One
time, good afternoon, then good evening, good day.
Good day.
Buenos dias.
Good morning, if they're listening in Japan or who
exactly.
knows where.
Mm-hmm. Germany, certainly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sherry, you've been a Zen student and teacher for many years, published many great books.
More years than I can actually imagine at this point.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
It's very difficult to remember a time before practice, not a bad thing.
Exciting.
As long as I don't run into people who knew me before practice and they want to remind me about those times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Exactly. We're going to be doing a special show today, which is email questions only, because you'll be in Africa.
Because actually, as people are listening to this, I am in Africa,
if all goes well. Yes.
Yeah, setting up our project. In fact, I just talked today with Sister Terry, who's one of the people on the team, and she said it looks like we're not going to make it to Zimbabwe.
I see.
Because things are in such a state of unrest there, she said. But the good news is that means we'll probably be stuck in South Africa at the facility in Kunstadt, where uh-huh. there is the school that needs to be built to take in the other 900 children who could
yes.
go to school there as soon as we get it done.
Yes.
And she said what that means is we might actually get to do some work.
Oh.
So that's, to me, makes it an even more exciting trip than the one we had anticipated.
Yes.
Yeah.
That sounds great. So you'll be back after June 25th.
Correct.
Wonderful.
Yes, we always like to say, if the good Lord's willing and the creek don't
and
rise.
And the creek don't rise. Great. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has a burning question for you in the meantime,
they should email it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Then as soon as I get back,
we'll get on the air and answer it. Mm-hmm. And that email address is openair@kzsu.org. Great. And I have a bunch of email questions here.
Lovely.
Lovely. Dear Sherry, I've discovered a core belief that creates an undercurrent and sometimes a tidal wave of suffering in my life. Some part of me believes I deserve to be punished for being alive. I've heard you suggest applying our beliefs to other people to get a different perspective. Wouldn't I think it ludicrous if someone else said they believed they deserve to be punished for being alive? Well, I hate to admit it, but that's just as believable. The overabundance of humans on the planet creates air, water, and noise pollution, congestion, violence, and other trauma. My mere existence uses up resources and puts out pollutants that damage this beautiful earth I love. It seems quite logical that the fewer of us there are, the better off everyone, including the planet itself, would be. Any suggestions?
Well, yes, I would suggest that the possibility that that is all just what we call in Zen horse pucky.
Horse pucky.
This person says, this beautiful planet that I love, something like that. Well, without this person, of course, there would be no love of this beautiful planet.
Yes.
So, we get these ideas. First of all, I would like to say that if I had a vote, I'm going to vote for somebody staying around who loves this planet and thinks it's beautiful rather than the people who don't seem to love it and don't think it's beautiful.
Yes.
But see, I'm in this bad position of figuring since they're here, they get to stay too. But just that very notion that here is somebody who is concerned, so concerned about the well-being of something that they would be willing not to exist in order for that well-being to be furthered. Well, now that's a person I want to keep on the team.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Do you see what I mean?
Sounds like someone who's concerned about the planet
yes.
and their impact.
Yes, and don't we want those kinds of people to stay around and continue to appreciate it and do what
and
they can to take care of it?
Yes.
So the idea that we get, certain human beings get, and I want to go back to this because, you know, there are a lot of human beings who never think about the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Never. And if they did think about it, would think, well, it's here for us to use. Mm-hmm. So what is the problem? So it's interesting to me that the people who are concerned are the ones who feel that their existence is somehow expendable, that they're the ones who should leave so that the earth will be better off. Mm-hmm. I don't see that. For instance, if there are people who, let's just say, are interested in human beings living in peace, and without their existence, human beings would be better off because there'd be nobody to be in conflict with the people who want war. It's just a flawed logic as far as I'm concerned. But aside from that, the part that troubles me is the – I mean, if I were going to be troubled about these sorts of things, which I don't intend to be, the idea that life as it is somehow a mistake. That the way human beings are is a mistake, that the way the planet is a mistake, that how we are in relationship to the planet is a mistake. Where do we get this idea? Again, it presupposes some sort of other reality that is more valid than the one we have, that there's an alternate, universe B in which none of this exists and that things are the way we believe in our conditioned little view of life things should be. Mm-hmm. And there's really no evidence of that. Mm-hmm. So, one of my favorite ways of talking about this, as you well know, is that these kinds of ideas are around simply to ruin our good time. Uh-huh. So what is the result? What is the net result of maintaining a belief like that? Well, I'm unhappy. Uh-huh. I suffer. My life is unpleasant. Okay, so then we get to, well, but I believe it. Okay, so yes. I could say, well, that you're only holding on to that belief because it ruins your life. Now, that's a hard one for most people to swallow because they would say, I don't want my life ruined.
Yes.
Well, if you don't want your life ruined, then don't believe that. If somebody said, UFOs came down last night and they took my wife and me up to, you would think, oh, wow, poor baby, right? Because you would not believe that that person's experience was valid.
Yes.
You would think that they had slipped a cog somewhere and that they were not quite right from our perspective. Okay, then put this belief in that same category and stop believing it.
Uh-huh.
Just simply allow yourself to go to a place every time that belief arises of knowing that that's not true. That is simply something, if somebody said, there are races that are superior to other races.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a lot of people on this planet who believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make it true? No. From my perspective, it's hogwash.
Yes.
So I don't have to believe that because it's hogwash.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter if that was instilled in me. As soon as I get it, as soon as I open to the possibility that that is erroneous, then I can begin the process of proving to myself that it is not true.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of belief is the same thing.
Mm.
Simply to look at, why would I want to believe that? Where is the validity? Where is the information?
Yeah.
If I'm going to accept something as true, I want some proof.
Uh-huh.
I don't want it just to be some random thought that goes through my mind, and then I think,
yes,
that's true. I mean, where am I getting that information? So if I don't have any evidence and there is no proof, why would I believe one thing over another?
Yes.
Yeah.
Reminds us of our show last week about the dialogue keeping us in a place of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the point of this internal
dialogue. That's all that's going on. So sometimes we Buddhists, slide into those very scary places where we talk about things like hungry ghosts that hover around and suck the life force out of us. It's a very dramatic image. And we can certainly see that. So what is the benefit of doing this? Why not take that life force, that time, that energy, and turn it into something worthwhile? Why not lick stamps and put them on letters from some group trying to improve the quality of life on this planet instead of just allowing that life force to be siphoned off into all of this, what can we call it? All of this negativity, all of this unpleasantness, unhappiness that is doing what? What's What's the point? What is it serving? Nothing.
Yes.
So
a
bunch of people get around and they, pick on this group of people and call them names and hate them and point out how they're doing everything wrong and they're the thing that's ruining this country. And where are we at the end of that conversation? Uh-huh. Has anything happened that's going to make life better for anybody? No. So what's been going on? A lot of suffering. A lot of people being made miserable and a lot of little hungry ghosts having a big meal. And is that what we want to put our lives toward?
Yes.
So to me, it's just stopping and seeing through it. So, what the person has said is I look at it and I think, well, yeah, there are other people that I believe this about. Well, okay, then that would be a good belief system to look into.
Mm-hmm.
What is the point of believing that?
Mm.
What is the point?
Mm.
And I don't think the person is going to find any point other than it keeps me at the center of the universe being miserable.
Yes, yes.
I've worked with a lot of people over the years who, they're anorexic and they're starving themselves to death, or they're addicted to some sort of substance and they're killing themselves that way, or they smoke and they're doing it the slow way, or they're just they're addicted to unpleasant. So they just listen to the news all day long and live in an ulcer of righteous mm-hmm. indignation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, why don't they just go to someplace like Bangladesh and build houses for people who keep having their houses wash away, or come to Africa with me and let's put all of that energy into building a school so that we can get these kids off the street and give them a hope of something, a life expectancy greater than adolescence.
Yes.
And why continue to just feed that kind of suffering?
Yes.
I see no sense in it.
Yes.
So at least with this long attack, I'm hoping that people will be open to the possibility that that's all that's going on, is that self-hatred, suffering is being fed.
Yes.
And maybe a growing unwillingness to feed it. Because, if we take it right back to what this person is talking about, does this planet need more of that? I think this planet has plenty of negativity, self-hatred, and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think it needs another dose of it in the name of look at all of these people who are mired in self-hatred, negativity, and suffering.
Yes.
So
yes.
If we don't like it, if we don't want that to happen, then let's not be that.
Yes. In other words, if you want peace, be peace.
That's exactly right.
If you want love, be love.
That's exactly right. Rather than, I want this planet to be more loving, and I hate everybody on the planet who I perceive as being unloving. It's just...
Yes.
It just doesn't take us where we want to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Sherry, in your response, you mentioned hungry ghosts a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And for our listeners who are not familiar with that term, can you expand
on
that?
Yeah, well, in Eastern philosophy, people are not as concerned with being rigidly... literally, rationally, whichever side of the brain it is that only likes mathematical equations.
Uh-huh.
And so they'll get a little picturesque in their images of how these things work. And one of those picturesque images is the idea that there are these entities that we can't see who mm-hmm. cluster around us, and they actually live from the feed on negative emotion.
Uh-huh.
And so they are interested in our suffering because that's what they eat.
Yes.
And so it's just an interesting way to look at what goes on with us, because we all know the idea of walking around. It's a perfectly beautiful spring or summer day, and really there's nothing going on except a thought comes into our minds, and then a next one, and a next one, and a next one. And pretty soon, we're just miserable and hating life and all worked up and upset and in a state. If you think there are entities swirling around you who feed off of that kind of energy, you could think, huh, well, That's as good an explanation as any for why on a beautiful day I'm walking down the street hating myself and life and
suffering.
Why are we doing that?
Yes.
You know, when I look at this culture, it is an extremely egocentric, self-hating culture. And the more we get pulled into the kind of television and movies and media, you know, it's just an endless working up emotion. I mean, people are just kept in a state of intense emotion.
Yes.
And so if you picture these little hungry ghosts just
munching away
on
dinner
all of that.
Time.
That's right. Then that's a pretty good picture of how it works. And again,
yes,
as good of an explanation as any. You know, in the West, we go, oh, well, that's ridiculous. Okay. Well, I agree. It probably is. But give me a better explanation for what's going on.
Yes.
You know, we all just enjoy being miserable. We enjoy suffering. We really hate, think that hateful situations are the funniest. Have you tuned into any sitcoms lately?
Yes.
The more hateful they are, the funnier people think they are. You know, reality TV, where people just sink to the lowest levels of human behavior, and people are absolutely glued to it. Now, what? You give me an explanation for what's going on with that. Mm. That's better than Hungry Ghosts. So,
right. Yeah, I don't have an explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. Why? Why is that kind of unpleasantness, ugliness, hatefulness? Why is that more entertaining than kindness?
Yes.
I don't understand it. So.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, this is the kind of thing maybe when I get back that we could get a discussion going about.
Great.
That people could call in. That, let's make that the homework, okay? Let's get a discussion. We all look inside.
Yes.
And what is the draw to that kind of I've never seen one of those reality TV shows, but people tell me about them, where people are just pitted against one another and encouraged to be just as ugly as a human being can possibly get. And what is it that people find so entertaining about that? Mm. You know, what is our need to see suffering, to just be immersed in everything that's wrong and all the worst qualities of human beings?
Yes.
What is our need to wallow in that?
Yes.
Because all over the planet, people are doing marvelous, heroic things everywhere, and we have to really ferret that information out because it's not anything.
It's not on the headlines.
No, it's not information that anybody seems interested in us having. We have to search and search and search, and for most of us, I think it comes via other people who know about something, and they tell us about something heroic that they have heard or some wonderful work that somebody's doing. But it doesn't seem to be the thing that people are most drawn to, and I would love to know why.
Yes. So people could drop us an email.
Drop us an email. Give us a call. Not wait till I get back from Africa.
Yes.
And let's talk about what is the appeal of that.
Yes.
Because the people who tell me about it seem like normal, rational, you know.
Rational as they can get.
Yeah, relatively conscious human beings. And yet they'll tell me that they're addicted to these things.
Yes.
And what is that in us? I would love to know.
Interesting. Wonderful stuff. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name's Michael Gray. You're listening to KZSU Stanford. You can pick us up in the Bay Area at 90.1 FM. Over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. Coming up today at 5:40 p.m., we have the news, followed by DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian. That'll be at 6 o'clock, followed by The Bot of Euphony at 9 p.m. Sherry, I have another email question here. Sherry, the sermon, quote, "You Are Accepted," was perhaps theologian Paul Tillich's best-known sermon. He viewed self-acceptance as very difficult and as being at the heart of Christianity. I am intrigued by the closeness of your teaching of self-acceptance and Tillich's thought about this. Do you have any comment to make about this?
No, except that I don't know that I'm informed of that
via this email.
Via this email, and I appreciate it very much. I will do my homework. I will read. That's very exciting to me. I would agree with him wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
It is the hardest thing. I think it is what Jesus was teaching.
Mm.
I think it's what the Buddha was teaching. And the ways that has gotten removed from the major religions, I think, has everything to do with what I call egocentric karmic conditioning and those little munchers that we were talking about.
Removing the concept of self-acceptance?
That's right. That self-hatred is the way to be a good person.
Uh-huh.
So
monitoring ourselves.
And as I say constantly, we are a culture that deeply, deeply, deeply believes punishment is the source of goodness.
Uh-huh.
It's crazy. It's profitable. It's excellent for controlling people. That idea that religion is the opiate of the masses.
Uh-huh.
No, self-hatred is the opiate of the masses.
Uh-huh.
If you can get a group of people to hate themselves, punish, monitor, as you said, watching themselves all the time, judging one another, punishing one another, you've got a very manageable group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that currently in our culture, we are a very manageable group of people.
Mm-hmm.
You take self-hatred, mix in a great big dose of fear,
uh-huh.
and you have people who will do whatever you tell them to do.
Yes.
So I'm very excited to read what he had to say about that. One of my favorite, all-time favorite quotes of Jesus is the "Do unto one another love one another as I have loved you,"
uh-huh.
and the idea of treating one another as Jesus treated us.
Yes.
That whole, what is it? It's escaping me now, but it's the least of my brethren.
Treat the least of my brethren as you would treat
it, me.
Uh-huh.
Which was the
uh-huh.
idea.
Yes.
I'll have that quote by the time we get next. Because it is my all-time favorite quote, so
uh-huh.
I can't believe that it flew away in that moment. But you know what I mean.
Yes, we're all the same.
Yes, and that the way that I would treat Jesus is the way that I am required to treat you,
yes.
and that it extends to that is the way I'm required to treat myself.
Yes.
That this self, having a self, is not a way of having a human being to abuse and mistreat,
yes.
and sink to the lowest level of humanity and justify it by believing that I am making myself a better person. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Yes.
So that's very thrilling to me.
Yes, exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really interested when you were talking about being managed and controlled versus freedom. And as we talk about a lot in this practice, is getting to a place of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, in my experience, it's been a real gift to not feel controlled and managed. And
yes,
you know, it
watched.
Can be exactly.
Yeah.
And it can be perhaps scary to myself and perhaps to others, but, you know, I like it. I like being out of control.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I'm alive.
Absolutely.
At least.
And if you do something that leads towards suffering rather than away from suffering, you'll find out.
Yeah.
You'll get that information, and
yes.
then you can correct your course.
Yeah.
That's different from having this paranoid, watchful eye on you all the time.
Yes.
That kind of controlling, judging,
standards.
Punishing, standard holding sort of thing is egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yes.
From the moment when we're present, goodness is our essential nature, and goodness is what's there. It's what arises. We don't have to fear that from center we are going to be dangerous or scary
mm-hmm.
or harmful. That doesn't
mm-hmm.
come from center.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from egocentric karmic
mm-hmm.
conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
There's another discussion we can have. I would love to have a discussion with people about all of the ways that all of the religions and the spiritual traditions are the same. Mm. And let's throw in psychology. All of the ways that people who are attempting to wake up and end suffering, however they talk about that, are doing and saying the same thing. At the people who are actually doing that. Now, you get a lot of craziness in every walk of life.
Yes.
People who, in fact, I just read something by a very famous person who calls himself Buddhist, and perhaps he is, I don't know, but he was advising people to get back to self-hatred. Hmm. That one of the difficulties going on in Buddhism in the West is this whole idea of self-acceptance, and that what you need to do if you're going to be enlightened is to get back to self-hatred and use that as a way of spurring yourself on to go beyond your ego and reach enlightenment, which is one of the scariest things I've ever encountered.
Wow. Sounds scary to me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like the self-acceptance.
Yes. And, of course, you know, self-hatred is very easy.
Yes.
Very easy. It is not a challenge at all. And that's, you know, what I was asking about earlier. What is this appeal to cruelty and hatred and a lack of kindness and understanding? Why do people choose to come home from a hard day at work and sit in front of a television set and watch that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, it's easy.
Yes.
Self-acceptance is very difficult. It takes a radical spiritual transformation to be able to accept what we would talk about as the small self, that little ego, that illusion of a separate self, to be able to accept what I think of as my personality into unconditional love takes a radical spiritual transformation. Mm-hmm. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Listening to that still small voice.
Exactly.
Yes.
And trusting it.
Trusting it.
Being willing to turn our lives over to that and to follow it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds exciting.
It truly is.
Yes.
And challenging and scary. And it makes us go beyond the limitations that we've always believed are ours in order to step into that greater perspective. We can't do what we're talking about from a small place. We have to step out of that small conditioned reality and into that expansive clarity in order to accept, to be able to accept that small conditioned self.
Yes.
We can't accept the small conditioned self from the small conditioned self.
Exactly.
When we try to do that, we just wind up in self-hatred, which is wonderful because it's like if you want to know which town you're in, there it is. If it's small and constricted and hateful and mean-spirited, that's egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yes.
If it's expansive and generous and grateful and loving and accepting, that's center. So it's, you know, it's not actually even mysterious.
Yes. Wonderful. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Some wonderful words of wisdom. My name's Michael Gray. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We've had some great email questions, some good stuff, and I have another one
here.
Dear Sherry, I've greatly appreciated your recent discussions of and guidance to just say yes, particularly because it feels like it is so connected to keeping my energy flowing. It is really quite amazing to parts of me that have wanted to say no, particularly to external people in my life who say hurtful things to me. In those situations, I can feel that my saying no is a shutting down, a defensive maneuver. It almost feels like what I'm saying no to is then getting stuck or glommed onto me energetically and starts to bog me down almost immediately, even if I think it isn't true or that I don't believe it. Nevertheless, part of me feels like there are times when it is very hard to say yes. And as I say that, I realize that this must be when I'm caught in conditioning because it wouldn't matter from center. It seems as if the yes isn't the same as saying I believe it when I don't believe it, but rather it is more acknowledging, accepting whatever has been said. Could you say more about saying yes in these situations that someone here says are difficult? That is, when I'm identified. It seems like particularly saying yes in those situations, when I have remembered, gets my attention to come back to the breath and disidentify and then I am okay.
Right. Well, there's not much to say, right? Because this this writer has laid it out, it seems to me, very, very clearly how the whole process works. So when I'm identified, when I am in that small conditioned mind and somebody says something to me, that position, being a small conditioned mind, is taking things personally.
Yes.
Is believing that this is so, is paying attention only to what is going to cause me to suffer. So, of course, job one all the time is to disidentify from that and get back to center. Mm-hmm. When we do that, then it's immediate and automatic. So you've just said something to me that I feel is really cruel. Okay. Yes, you did. Now, does that mean you meant it? No. Does it mean you didn't mean it? No. Does it have anything to do with me? No. Do I have to take it on? No. So all, as the writer has said, you know, when I can say yes to it, yes, that happened. Yes. Huh. Yes, he said that. Yes, I could make it mean X, Y, or Z, or I could just come back here and breathe. Now, this, to me, is the biggest commercial for awareness practice in the form of meditation.
Uh-huh.
Because what we learn to do in meditation is notice where the mind goes, notice it, come back to the breath. It wanders off again, we notice it, we come back to the breath. So I'm training myself to be able to be here. I don't have to. Now, this is not to say that this is like a 1 week process that we're talking about. Okay? Yes, it's hard. Yes, as the challenges get bigger and bigger and bigger, it will continue to feel hard for a while.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
uh-huh.
So I am training myself through a sitting practice to come back to the breath, no matter what's going on. Eventually, you know, sirens are going and the kids are screaming in the other room and my leg is falling asleep and I just got fired from my job, and I can sit right here and just breathe in and out, breathe in and out,
yes.
breathe in and out. I don't
yes.
have to believe it. I don't have to go with it. I don't have to get involved. This is a tremendous skill to have, because you just said something really upsetting to me, and I look at it and I can say, oh, yeah, and I've been doing awareness practice for a long time, so I can even say, wow, that's exactly the kind of thing my father used to say to me when I was little, and it was really upsetting to me, and I know the part of me who suffers over that,
yes.
and blah, blah, blah. I know the whole thing, and
yes.
Because that's important. You know, it's important to bring the kind of awareness to it that enables me to know what those conditioned responses are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now I know. And so now what I want to do is be able to just come back to the breath. And if I have done my homework on the cushion,
yes.
I can do that. And
yes.
I can watch conditioned mind try to pull me back into a conversation about this, and I can just let it go and come back to the breath until finally it has no ability to pull me off at all. It's
mm-hmm.
just a matter of the past.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within that, I can also play certain fun, interesting games. So you've said this thing that is upsetting to me, and I could launch into that and just make myself absolutely miserable over it,
mm-hmm.
or I could drop that and look at how I say things to people that could be upsetting to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Projection.
What a notion.
Uh-huh.
That if I listen to everything I say, it could be upsetting to somebody.
Yes.
There is no question about it, depending on their point of view.
Yes.
I was talking with somebody just this morning who's doing a process where evaluations are involved.
Uh-huh.
And anybody who's ever done that knows you can get 1,000 excellents, and you get one in there that is even a good instead of a very good.
Yes.
And that's the obsession. Okay.
Yes.
And if you get one in there where the person just hates everything you do,
mm-hmm.
that's the one that you're going to. All those other ones don't count.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that's meaningful.
Yes.
Now that's an interesting process right there, isn't
it?
Yes. What is the point of that except to be miserable?
Yes.
So realizing that that's the way life works.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there are, in fact, people in the world who, because of whatever is going on with them, will actually say cruel things to you.
Mm-hmm.
They will.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to take that personally, if we're going to make it mean something about us, if we're going to think that we should live our lives so that everybody in the world adores us, then we're going to suffer over that. You know, if we live our lives in such a way that everything about us is acceptable to us, then we're not going to suffer like that.
Yes.
So back to a conversation we had earlier, that this sort of thing happens, and I can even enjoy the process of watching mm-hmm. my conditioning arise about that, how the mm-hmm. voice wants to get righteously indignant and wants
yes.
to project all this stuff and blame and point fingers and be the innocent victim. And I can watch all of that and just go,
wow,
human beings are interesting critters. No wonder we have the ability to suffer that we have.
Yes.
And just notice all of that. It's really interesting. It's a little mini workshop. Come back to the breath and go on with our lives.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah. And so then we get back to an earlier email. Yeah, but what if it's really true? You know, what if you really dislike me and you said that to me because you really do dislike me and you want to hurt my feelings? Okay. So what? What does that mean? Have I never been that way with anybody? Am I never
right.
that way with myself? Do I
right.
never hear voices in my head say things to me that are designed for no other purpose than to make me unhappy? Yes, that exists in the world. Can I allow that to be? You know, not every sunset is gorgeous. You know, the sun doesn't come out every day. It's really, really true. And, you know, I don't sleep well every night. And there are actually a lot of foods that when I go around, people put on the table in front of me that are not my favorite. Okay. Yes,
wow.
All of that is so. And can I still enjoy life? Can I still be happy?
Yes. So in other words, my life is not perfect.
By somebody's
moment,
standards.
By somebody's standards.
And in fact, depending on who
it's always going to be not perfect.
By somebody's standards,
yes.
Right? I can always find a voice of discontent in there if I look around for it.
Yes.
And can I be all right with that? Good.
Yes.
There's always there's a voice in there that's going to be unhappy with anything. Can I be all right with that?
Yes.
If so, life is going to be good.
Freedom.
If not, that's right. Then life is going to be miserable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fascinating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, a couple things occurred to me as you were talking, and you elaborated on one of them a little bit, which is not taking anything personally.
Yeah.
One of the keys to freedom and joy as you talk about it.
Right. Here we are in this conditioned reality.
Yes.
Right? We all had the same conditioning. We've
mm-hmm.
all, at least most of us, hang out with a lot of people who have the same conditioning
yes.
that we have.
Yes.
So is it personal? Well, you know, we just got to get it that almost nobody knows that we're alive. We even forget that we're alive. We forget that we are sensitive people who should be
uh-huh.
treated nicely. We forget that about ourselves.
Yes.
Why would other people remember it?
Yes.
Yeah. So not to take it personally. We're all out there doing what it is that we're doing. And if we just get it that that's all that's happening, you know, we assume that people are conscious. And I think that is a grossly inaccurate assumption. You
uh-huh.
know, most of the time people are just operating out of a conditioned program,
yes.
just saying whatever, have no idea what they've said, have no idea how it
mm-hmm.
sounds, how they're acting,
mm-hmm.
And that we are the same way a great deal of the time. So why take it personally that human
why
beings are the
personally?
Way they are?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Why not instead, since we have the option, why not bring compassion to the situation?
Huh.
We have the full range of options in responding to life. Why not through compassion? Why not just say, wow, you know, it's hard to be a human being.
Yes.
Let's just be nice to that person.
Yes.
But he's a jerk. Well, okay, then that's a double reason
more
for being.
Of a reason.
Right. Right. Because, you know, he is already suffering.
Yes.
What's
being a jerk is suffering.
That's suffering.
Yes.
Why add to it?
Yes. Yes.
But if I take it personally, I have to, because I have to retaliate and I have to run all of my numbers on it. And if I can just remember how would I like the world to be? How would
uh-huh.
I? How do I want to be treated? Well, then let's respond from there.
Yes.
And the only way you know that we can do that is if we're having that relationship with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not having that relationship with ourselves, then it's really, really, really hard to
mm-hmm.
offer it to somebody
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
I would say impossible.
Wow. Wow. Wonderful. And I was thinking, as you were talking earlier, about this is hard and it doesn't happen overnight or in a week. And I remember you talking on an earlier show about the rewards getting bigger and bigger and bigger over time as well.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So let's not forget the rewards.
That's right. That's right. And as our friend Dogen, who is
yes.
the founder of the particular type of Soto Zen that I practice, or at least the main light of that,
yes.
Just simply the awareness of all of this is the reward.
Mm.
Just that.
Uh-huh.
The awareness that there is, that it's possible to be aware that it's possible to end suffering,
yes.
That living in the present is something that a human being can experience. Just knowing that is such a huge reward.
Wow.
If we never did anything else, we've already been blessed beyond all telling.
Yes, yes.
Because there are most people who are born onto this planet will die never knowing that there is an alternative to suffering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite quotes, probably one of yours as well, it goes something like, when you're enlightened in the morning, you don't mind dying in the afternoon.
Exactly.
And that's the reward of being aware.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Exciting. Good
yes.
stuff.
Yeah. This is reality radio that we're experiencing here.
That's a good name for it. Yeah. Reality radio. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Had some great emails
yes,
today.
Yes, I really appreciate that people sit down, take the time to write these things out. It's very helpful for all of us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple minutes left here. Shall
Good.
We do one more email?
Let's do it.
Sherry, do you think it is possible to raise children so that they, when adults, do not have to find their way to living from essential nature, which Buddhism teaches in compassionate awareness? If so, how?
Now, is the person saying, raise them in such a way that they never have to find their essential nature? Is that what that actually
like.
Said? Why would we want to do that?
Hmm.
My very unpopular take on parenting is that children are going to be who we are. Our children will be who we are.
Uh-huh.
We're not going to be able to be how we are and then raise our children to be a different way. It doesn't work like that. We in my house, we speak English. They are not going to spontaneously launch into French or Chinese or something else. You know, if I raise them on potatoes and peas and lamb chops, then that's what they're going to think food is and that's what they're going to like. And, and that's just how it is. And when they get old enough, they will go to the opposite side of the continuum, which is the same thing.
Yes, okay? In our so, duality.
Yeah, they just go from one end of the duality to the other. So I'm very responsible. They become teenagers. They are what I identify as irresponsible. And then when they become adults, they're going to be my definition of responsible. So we're
yes.
not actually going anywhere in all of that
yes.
adolescent opposition.
Yes.
So if we want our children to have an easier time finding their authentic nature after they have been conditioned away from it, then their very best chance is to see us modeling it.
Uh-huh.
And the only way they're going to see that is if we are living from it. So once again, our greatest gift to our children is to be the people that we would like them to be.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Not be people that we don't like trying to tell them or give them something different. It just doesn't work that way.
Yes. Yes. Wow. That's exciting.
Yeah. You know, most of us know that that the greatest thing in the world is, and you can think of this literally, metaphorically, you've been away on a long trip, and the trip can be whatever it is. It may be some good, some bad, as we would think about it. And then you come home.
Mm-hmm.
And you love your home, and it's a refuge, and it's secure, and it's beautiful, and it's beautiful because it looks the way you like things to look.
Yes.
And you just it's just a wonderful thing to come home.
There's
it's rest and relief and relaxation and happiness and security and all of those kinds of things.
Yes.
Why would we want to deprive anyone of that experience?
Mm.
Would we say, well, just always stay home, and then you'll always live in that place? But it doesn't work that way. We stay home all the time, and we get used to it. We forget to appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
You go out there, and you find out how bad things can be out there, and even how good things can be.
Yes.
And then you come home and just go, oh, this is great. I'm home.
Yes.
That's what awareness practice is like. That's what waking up is like.
Coming home.
Yeah, I don't fault the system. I think kids are fine.
Yes.
As my friend, the Gestalt therapist, said, and I clean this up for reality radio here, the given is you're going to mess up your kids.
Uh-huh.
That's the given. Do it in the way that's most comfortable for you.
Yes.
And then trust their adequacy and that they will find their way to they will find their way home. And the best way to show them the way is go out and wander around and come back home. Go out
yes.
and wander around and come back home.
Yes.
And that's what they'll see. That's what you'll model. And that's what they'll do. And it's going to all be fine.
It's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
What a great way to end the show.
Wonderful.
You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you'd like to learn more about what Sherry's doing, please check out her website, sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. Coming up next, we have the news, then DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian at 6 p.m., followed by the Bod of Euphony at 9 p.m. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
See you soon.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.